Your dose of classic soul and independent R&B music from the United States and abroad on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A Bowl of Soul is a music experience you won't forget or regret. Check out A Bowl of Soul on the Progressive Radio Network.
You're listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We have a lot to share today, always meaning to help people live a happier, healthier, longer life. I was going to start today's show with a half-hour discussion of how to slow down the aging process. We've been working diligently collecting information on repairing DNA, extending the length of telomeres, and repairing the damage to the mitochondria. Those are the three factors that really determine how long you're going to live and how healthy you'll live during that period of time. But about 10 minutes ago, I realized I have at least 2.5 hours of material. I'm not going to cut it short, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to save that, and I'm going to put together instead a webinar where I'll show a film on aging, and then I'll do like a 2.5 hour discussion and answer questions about everything you need to slow down and reverse the aging process naturally. That way, there won't be any shortcuts. Everything that I know that can help you live a longer life, repair the damage to the life you've lived, I will be sharing at that time. So I'll let you know when we have a date and what we're going to do. In the interim today, I will talk about how, from the Polytech University in Italy and the University of European Atlantic Studies in Spain, how strawberries can be used against breast cancer. And also today, zinc supports a cardio health, according to Techno University of Munich. And I'll tell you how much zinc. And then for all the women in the audience using oral contraceptives, be aware they reduce your general well-being, even if you're a healthy woman, who says the Karolinska Institute in Sweden. And also how if you have someone who has problems with stroke, or they've had a stroke and they have seizures, or they just have seizures, Ohio State University College of Medicine found that a cannabis-based medicine can cut seizures in half for those with tough-to-treat epilepsy and also seizures. And University of South Australia, resveratrol, that's what you find in grapes, grape seed and grape skin, shows bone health, and especially in children who've had chemotherapy, because they frequently end up destroying their mineralization of the bones. Also, from the Karolinska Institute again, electroacupuncture can improve regulation of blood sugar in overweight and obese women. That's good to know. And research discovered mitochondria circuit breaker that protects heart from damage, from our National Institutes of Health. So all this is good stuff. And also, I've been asked many times, Gary, which is better, DHA or EPA? They're both omega-3 fatty acids for the heart, for our preventing disease. Well, I'll tell you my belief, and also share with you the British Journal of Nutrition research done at the University of Cincinnati, which tells us which is better and therefore what we should spend time on. Also today, we're going to go to our audio file, since I'm not going to have a guest. And I'm going to share, for those of you who do not understand the difference between, let's say, a Bill O'Reilly, the most popular person on commercial or non-commercial radio, as far as a large older audience, his audience, I think, around 73 years of age, tending to be more conservative. He he gave the notion that he was not conservative, but everything on Fox is conservative. It just means how conservative. Neoconservative, warmongering, they got a lot of those. Or simply financially conservative, they have some of those as well. But he was a brand. He no longer. He's gone. And I'll share my own thoughts on that in a little commentary later. But he was a personality. But he's up against the brand. And in America, throughout the world, it's the brand that survives, not the personality. As a result, you could have a brand that everybody wants to put their energy behind and the personalities who make that brand possible. But personalities come and go. No matter who has been on television, radio, or newspaper, they can come and go. Someone will always be there to take your place, but the brand continues. Well, then, if that's the case, what if a person becomes a brand? For example, like Brand Trump. So what if you wanted to challenge the policies of his presidency? You have to go after the brand. If you go after the brand, then you're challenging him personally, because all he is a brand. Everything in his life is a brand. So I'll explain about that, and then we're going to listen to a discussion from Naomi Klein about how to jam the Trump brand. Also, all you have to do is watch the Superhawks. They're the ones in control of everything out of Washington. They control the Washington Post. They control all of the stuff out of defense, state, all the different agencies when it comes to our war on terrorism. But when was the last time the President of the United States or Secretary of State got up in front of the public and said, look, it is not Islam in and of itself that is the problem, because the vast majority of people who are believing in Islam are peaceful and loving people. No different than most Christians, most Jews are the same. They're loving and decent human beings. They're not violent. They're not going to go bomb someone. They're not going to become a suicide martyr. But there is an element of Islam that will. And that's what they're not talking about. Because if they simply separated off Wahhabist philosophy, which is Wahhabism, and who supports it? Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait. Well, then you start looking, wow, a whole lot of these Arab nations support a radicalized new, it wasn't around the time Islam was started. This is a recent phenomena. And how the Saudi family married together with the Wahhabist. And then, so if you're going to deal with terrorism today, you're going to have to deal with Saudi Arabia. But we're not willing to do that. We're not willing to do it because we do business with them. And if we're doing business with them, hundreds of billions of dollars, and they're helping with stabilize the price of oil through OPEC, then how do you inform people without then becoming Islamophobic? Instead of condemning all people in Islam, why don't you say the Wahhabist terrorist instead of the Islamic terrorist? It's not. I'm not parsing words here in some form of dialectic. I'm trying to show that there is a distinct and radicalized group who are really responsible for almost all the terrorism, because everything feeds off of it, is supported off of it from those same countries. So we're going to play a short segment on that today that will give you history of Wahhabism. Also, what nuclear war would look like if we actually did it? This is a short clip, but boy, we should have some wise and sensible minds saying, hey, didn't at one time we have over 40,000 nuclear weapons? And didn't we get it down to around 7,000? Why can't we get it down to no nuclear weapons? Why aren't we moving and marching on that instead of let's apply more money for more weapons, nuclear weapons, new types of weapons that are more accurate. And no, let's get rid of all of them. I'll share that. And also, I want you to hear from an Aboriginal elder, Banjo Clark. He shares his wisdom. And I thought what he had to say was important. It's only a minute long, but at least we forget we all have been benefited by those who've come before us. And then I'll have one testimonial from a person who is not a believer in holistic living, or at least wasn't, but hopefully now, according to her own words, is a physician. And you'll hear what she has to say. I will be opening the phones later on, after a commentary, for TalkBack. So as you see, we have a lot to share today. Our TalkBack number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, starting off today, we're going to look at several things. One is zinc. Now, zinc is a mineral. It's a macro mineral. We don't need a lot of it, but generally between 10 and 20 milligrams a day. According to the Technical University of Munich, it benefits our heart. So we know that it's important in metabolic function, and the levels of zinc in the body also affect the heart muscle. So when oxidative stress occurs, it may be due to a shortage of zinc, which can be detrimental to the heart muscle itself. Now, as a runner, as a long-distance runner, as an ultra-long-distance runner, I've run 100 miles a week in my serious training for many of the championships and world games I've done. That is not good for the body, and I knew that. But I chose to do as much as I could to compensate for the long distance and the stress upon the body and the oxidative stress that you create. Oxidative stress is when you just simply breathe. When you exercise, you're engaging in oxidative stress. We have to have something to counterbalance that. So if you go for a run in the park around Central Park, which is 6 miles or wherever you run, you have to compensate for the free radicals that you've created just by breathing and muscle use. So if you took vitamin E at 400 units, vitamin C at 2,000 milligrams, coenzyme Q10 at 300 milligrams, L-carnitine at 1,000 milligrams, magnesium at 1,000 milligrams, calcium at 1,000 milligrams, and then added 20 milligrams of zinc, you would have then benefited from the run but not been harmed by the stress, oxidative stress from the workout. So your heart would still be in good shape. In fact, that's how you lower your pulse rate. And we know that for about every 10 beats per minute that you lower it, let's say you're at 80 beats per minute, but then after exercising for 6 months, it's at 70. You've added, by my best guesstimation, over 5 years onto your lifespan. So when you get your heartbeat down into the 40s or 50s, where long-distance athletes have it, you're adding a lot of life onto that heart. So oxidative stress occurs when more free radicals are generated in the cell than can be intercepted by antioxidants, such as the ones I just mentioned. Now, it has already been proven that a severe lack of zinc, which promotes obvious clinical symptoms, is also associated with increased cellular stress. And when you have increased cellular stress, that's when you hurt your heart. So, an article published in the Journal of Nutrition shows that when you take, let's say, 10 to 20 milligrams of zinc a day, you're doing your heart a lot of good. Now, mind you, there are many other things zinc does. It helps reduce the incidence of cancer, of colds, of the flu, strengthens your immune system, does all that as well. A study by European and Latin American researchers has shown that strawberries, an extract from strawberries, can inhibit the spread of laboratory-grown breast cancer cells, even when they are inoculated in female mice to induce tumors. So we've known that strawberries are extremely good for you. Now, let's just say we're dealing with 500 grams. All right, 500 grams is not a lot. That's about 10 to 15 strawberries. What would fit in a bowl? All right, a good amount. That's if you eat them. Now, if you juice them, you're just going to get like a couple tablespoons of strawberry juice. Well, if you had that per day, you're offering antioxidant, anti-inflammatory benefits, and you reduce blood cholesterol levels. And this was published in Scientific Reports showing, quote, we have shown for the first time that strawberries in extract form rich in phenolic compounds inhibit the proliferation of breast cancer cells in vitro and in vivo models. And that was the scientists who worked on it. So let's make sure that we're having strawberries. In fact, I believe that we should have a multitude of berries every day. Probably the most powerful berry you could have is blueberries. Blueberry juice, unsweetened, blueberry concentrate, blueberry powder, or blueberries. They're all good for you. Now, oral contraceptives is something we should pay attention to. You never hear about all the women developing ovarian cysts, fibrocystic breasts, or cancer due to having oral contraceptives. But that's exactly what happens. And one of the most common combined and contraceptive pills has a negative impact on women's quality of life, but does not increase depressive symptoms. And this is shown by a major randomized placebo-controlled study conducted by researchers at Karolinska Institute in Sweden in collaboration with the Stockholm School of Economics. And it was published in Fertility and Sterility, quote, despite the fact that an estimated 100 million women around the world use contraceptive birth control pills, we know surprisingly little today about the pill's effect on women's health. The scientific base is very limited as regards to contraceptive pills' effect on quality of life and depression, and there's a great need for randomized studies where it is compared with placebos, as according to the study. So they led this study, and they did looked at a lot of women who were using it, and they found that overall, it really is bad for women's health, but not specifically for depression. That's fine. There's 1,000 other things women could have wrong with them outside of depression. So my suggestion is this. I support women's right to whatever form of birth control they wish to use, absolutely. But there are safer methods that one can use. And on an upcoming program, I will set aside more than a half hour to go into safer, non-invasive to the biochemistry of the body, natural forms of birth control for men and women. And so we save some lives, hopefully, because women's risk of a stroke using birth control pills also increased. So I'll have a long set of, as I normally do when I do a classroom on the air, it takes a half hour and I give you a lot of information. That'll be coming up in the next couple of days. From the University of Colorado, they found that cannabinoids, the chemical in marijuana that has medicinal value, can soothe certain skin conditions. And they looked at the skin conditions. This is published in the Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. And the wide variety of skin conditions. I mean, right across the board, from acne to psoriasis, it helps. So the red, itchy, scaly, flaky skin, it helps also. So that's just to let you know, the science is there. The evidence is there. And by the way, these topical cannabinoid drugs do not have any psychotropic effects. They're used for the skin and hence don't impact your brain. But they do impact the skin. Now, another study at Ohio State University, College of Medicine, showed that cannabis taken internally can help cut seizures by 50%. And this was presented at the American Academy of Neurology's 69th annual meeting in Boston. Actually, it's coming up next week. So they know now that the cannabinoid is a molecule from the cannabis plant. It does not have psychoactive properties. They create the so-called high. So for those of you who whose brains explode because you listen to Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly and others who say, you know, it's a gateway drug. It is not. And how many people, you know, get high and then go out and kill someone? No one. So, but does it have good scientific basis to help people heal disease? Yeah, there are over 15,000 scientific citations in the government's own publications, their own Library of Medicine, and go through the PubMed, and you'll see all these studies. Why don't we know about these? Why aren't our doctors using them? Well, how about the lobbyists for the pharmaceutical industry that sells us the opiates at an enormous profit, that don't want us as a society using one of nature's own healers? And so it's propagandized. So a person's belief is based upon propaganda, not science. So just know the science is there to help you. And also from the University of South Australia, resveratrol. Res, R-E-S, Vera, V-E-R-A, Trol, T-R-O-L, resveratrol. And why do I spell words out all the time? Because people forget how large this audience is and how diverse. I'm broadcasting right now in probably every African country, 54 countries in Africa. I'm broadcasting in Southeast Asia, throughout South America. And not everyone has a, you know, can hear what I'm saying and understand it. So I like to break down certain words so they can then have a better grasp of what I'm saying. And then they can look up for themselves on their computer. They can Google resveratrol. Thousands of studies come up under different categories. And therefore they can see, oh, now I know what he was talking about. So let's say you have a child that is receiving chemotherapy. Okay. The child's going to have side effects, really bad side effects. And frequently, the side effects kill the children, not the cancer. Well, this study shows, and it was published in the journal Nutrients, quote, resveratrol is a potent candidate to prevent bone-related complications in children during and after chemotherapy. This was conducted both by the Australian and Chinese academics. Quote, intensive cancer chemotherapy known to cause bone defects, which currently lack treatments. In this study, they found that resveratrol helped prevent those bone deformities, and it had other positive effects. And finally, electroacupuncture can improve regulation of blood sugar in overweight and obese women. Well, that's a whole lot of people in the United States. One-third of the entire adult population. For women who are overweight or obese and are unable to exercise, this new research, which appears in the FASEB journal, a scientific journal, suggests combining acupuncture with an electrical current, a very weak electrical current, by the way, may help. And this was done by an international team of researchers using electroacupuncture to assist with muscle contraction, which led to improved blood sugar regulation. And it also benefited women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, the most common hormonal disorder among women, which is associated with prediabetes and increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. So very important. Easy to find. A lot of people are doing it. And that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. A couple of things before we continue. For all of you who were not able to listen to the webinar I recently did on how to survive any disaster, you can now go to prn.fm or garynall.com, and it'll take you to where for a very, you know, couple bucks, like I think $10 or $15, I think it's $10, and then if you get the movie that goes with it, it's $15, so it's nothing. You get 3.5 hours webinar. So now everybody can benefit. I'm sorry thousands tried and couldn't get on because our bandwidth had been tripled and we had more people than our bandwidth could withstand. So for the next one, We're going to make sure that our goal is to be able to have 50,000 people around the world listening to the webinar at the same time. So that's my goal. Let's see if we can do it. Anyhow, it's there. And we have a special today, and all the funds from this will go to support the Progressive Radio Network, and we're hiring some new people. We're going to hire someone, and this is just a word out before we put it into the marketplace. We're going to have an hourly news update and then the Progressive Commentary Hour twice a day, where there'll be a person live reading the news from around the world, progressive news, because now people go to CNN or Fox or some of the other places to hear their news, but it's all controlled data, the spin on it. And what if we could hear what's really going on that is important to people that we wouldn't hear on the mainstream media? So that's what we're going to do. So we're going to start in the very near future, as soon as we hire someone, to have every hour a news update at the top of the hour, like a 3-minute news update before the shows. It will not affect the shows. They'll still have their full time. And then 2 hours a day, one in the morning for those of you going to work and before work, you'll get your for the day ahead. And in the evening, you'll get what happened that day and from around the world. So, and we'll have contributions from at least 500 of the finest progressive minds and journalists and philosophers around the world participating. So, something new for you to look forward to. I'd like to shift gears now for a moment to talk about two issues that I think are important. One is, most Americans believe that the medical industrial complex is there to do the best research to find the most effective and safe drugs or medical procedures for us. But the reality is different. This is from Health Freedom Alliance. Pharma CEO, we're in the business of shareholder profit, not helping the sick. Quote, another pharmaceutical CEO is stepping up to challenge Martin Scorsese as the world's most hated man. Last month, Martin became a household name. The CEO of Turning Pharmaceuticals is now infamous for raising the price of a newly acquired drug from $14 to $750 a pill. He also explained in an interview that his company was not alone in acquiring drugs currently on the market to raise their price and in turn rapidly drive up their stock price. Enter J. Michael Pearson, the current CEO of Valeant Pharmaceuticals, who recently said that his company's responsibility is to its shareholders, while making no mention of his customers who rely upon drugs just to live. Quote, if products are sort of mispriced and there's an opportunity, we will act appropriately in terms of doing what I assume our shareholders would like us to do. End quote. Already this year, Valeant has increased the price of 56 of the drugs in his portfolio, an average of 66%, highlighted by their recent acquisition of a drug that they promptly raised 550%. Not only does this have the unfortunate side effect of placing the price of life-saving drugs out of reach for even moderately insured people, but it is now begun to call into question the sustainability of this rapidly spreading business model. In an interview with CNBC, Pearson defended his business practice by acquiring drugs instead of investing in research and development. Quote, my primary responsibility is to our shareholders. We can do anything we want to do. We will continue to make acquisitions. We will continue to move forward, end quote. Well, since being named CEO in 2008, his company has acquired over 100 drugs and seen their stock price rise by more than 1,000% when he was at the helm. What is my perspective on this? I believe that we have a responsibility to take the profit out of healthcare. There are so many other places to make a profit. I believe doctors, nurses, and healthcare providers should make a really good quality of life and living wage. They put a lot of money into medical schools and internship and residency. They've gone through great sacrifices. I'm not begrudging them.
I believe that all drugs, everything necessary to keep a person alive, including the hospitals and the treatments, the medications, should be minimal so that we do not have people dying because they cannot afford a medical procedure. We do not have people filing for bankruptcy. If we really cared about people in this country, we would have two programs. One, universal health care, so every American who needed medical care could get it under Medicare, and B, a private system for those who want a private system. We shouldn't just have one, and today that's what we have.
Now, let's go to our audio file, and let's hear about, we're going to go to Jamming the Trump Brand. I think you'll find Naomi Klein's explanation of what you can do if you're not happy with this president and his brand, to show a sense of civil indignation and civil disobedience.
You've probably noticed that Donald Trump has turned the presidency into an extension of his corporate brand.
We make the finest wine, and we have Trump steaks.
Of his daughter's brand.
Go buy Ivanka's stuff.
And of his wife's future plans to be a brand.
Trump's lawyer is charging that it put in peril her, quote, unique, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to make millions.
It's gross. That's a given. But for a moment, let's set aside how craven and seedy it all is and get strategic. If the president is a brand first and a politician a distant second, that gives his opponents all kinds of leverage. 17 years ago, I wrote a book called No Logo. It was about how, as companies and people morphed into super brands, they faced new vulnerabilities.
Coca-Cola, Disney, McDonald's, these core American brands became powerful precisely because they understood that they were selling ideas instead of products.
Because brand-based companies derive their value from being tightly associated with a particular image or big idea, if that image gets sullied, they're in serious trouble. We used to call this culture jamming or ad busting, flipping the marketing power behind a brand to tell a competing story about the sweatshops in which the clothes were made or the environmental devastation left behind. Any brand can be jammed. You just need to understand the image they're selling. Now, culture jamming fell out of fashion for a while, but with Trump, everything 90s is new again, especially his core brand identity, money. More specifically, Trump's brand is being the boss who is so rich he can do whatever he wants.
You're fired.
That's his twisted niche. That's why the supermodels.
Hi, friends. It's Melania Trump.
And the endless shots of his private jet. That's why Trump's relationship to gold is the inverse of Superman's relationship to kryptonite. He crumples if he's more than 3 feet away from something really, really shiny. Now that we know exactly what the brand is, it's obvious how to mess with it. Step one, fire the boss.
Can I have my desk back?
Yes, of course, Mr. President. I'll go sit at my desk.
Now, lots of you have already figured this out. If Trump's personal brand is being the boss, the way to jam that is to make him look like a puppet. This guy's puppet, or this guy's puppet, or this guy's puppet. It doesn't really matter who's yanking the strings, as long as the strings are there to be seen.
So why was Bannon demoted? Apparently, Trump has been bothered by the public perception that Bannon is actually the one in charge. Oh, my God, Donald, I am so sorry. I never would have called Steve Bannon the president if I knew it hurt your feelings so much.
More, please. Anything that chips away at Trump's carefully nurtured image of being the guy in charge. Step two, make Richie Rich less rich. Trump's brand is all about having bags and bags of money.
I'm really rich.
Which means that the other way to jam his brand is to make him less rich. Now, I don't mean make him seem less rich. No, I mean actively take money from him by sending his branding empire into crisis. This can happen. This is already happening. There's the Grab Your Wallet campaign, the clearinghouse for boycotts of Trump's web of brands. And check this out. And it's not just long ties and short skirts.
I'm back.
This guy says Celebrity Apprentice tanked because people didn't want to watch or sponsor a show associated with the President of the United States. But Trump's brand fights back hard.
I'm going to give a free commercial here. Go buy it today, everybody.
Entirely unburdened by ethics. And it may even be working. Ivanka's company claims that ever since the White House turned itself into the home shopping network, Trump's sales have actually spiked. Which is why it's time for step three, go after the big fish. One of the largest sources of revenue for the Trump Organization is leasing Trump's name to real estate companies around the world. Developers pay millions for the supposed privilege of putting the big golden Trump name on the facade of their buildings. Now, Trump is clearly betting that being president will drive up the price. But what if he's wrong? What if his brand becomes such trash that developers are willing to pay to take it down? That actually already happened in New York City when tenants of Trump Place demanded that their building manager de-Trumpify their home. And this is what happened when the Trump boys went to Vancouver to celebrate the opening of the latest Trump temple. If these kinds of protests keep spreading, more developers could decide to de-Trump themselves. We know how well Trump handled Nordstrom dropping his daughter's accessories line. How do you think he'd handle seeing his golden name dropped from giant phallic symbols from Vancouver to Manila? I say, let's find out. Step four, be a nuisance. Boycotts and sidewalk protests aren't the only way to wreak havoc with Trump's businesses. What if a whole lot of people made reservations at Trump hotels and resorts, and then all those people changed their minds right before the cancellation deadline? Now, I'm not suggesting anyone do this, of course. I'm just wondering what would happen. And what if customers who really did want to book reservations had a hard time getting through because so many other people were calling to express their views on Trump's attacks on the EPA or mass detentions of immigrants or losing their health insurance?
I never said repeal it and replace it within 64 days. I have a long time.
Now, if you go this route, please be polite. The person answering the phone almost certainly gets paid less than they deserve and could be secretly trying to form a union.
So that's Naomi Klein showing you some ways that you can impact Trump as a brand. Bill O'Reilly is not a brand. Bill O'Reilly is a personality who has benefited from a brand. Fox is the brand. His best-selling books are benefited by his personality. He has a large audience and millions of individuals who enjoy him, trust him, and align with him. And that's fine. That's their right. And it's his right to talk with those people at speeches. They're packed around the United States who read his books and watch him on television and who for years listened to him on radio. But here's the difference. He engaged in what his accusers claim was forms of sexual harassment. It wasn't one person. That was settled in the 2000s. But it was multiple ones. And so many so that there probably could be more coming out of the woodwork. And that the brand, Fox brand, was considered vulnerable. So it said goodbye to the host. This will not be the first time they did it with Don Imus. They've done it with a lot of people where the personality, no matter how popular, they say goodbye because they see that that person has done something wrong and is causing them income. On the other hand, there are personalities who are capable of becoming a brand. They are that well known, and that is to their benefit. But most of the people on radio and television are there as long as the people in the media want them. Why? Because the people who have the fiduciary responsibility have the fiduciary responsibility to protect the brand. That brings me over to Pacifica. There was a time in the United States where if you wanted to know the truth of what was going on social issues, from the Vietnam War to the Pentagon Papers and the break-in at Watergate, Iran-Contra, you knew that you would not get an unbiased opinion from most of the media. And many of the journalists still willing to tell you the truth in the media were being forced out, and they had to go to other media or to write books on their experience. And then we had Grove Press and some really outstanding publishers that specialize in publishing books of whistleblowers or dissenting voices. Four Walls, Eight Windows, Dan Simon's company, was one of those as well. Now, let's hear from an Aboriginal elder, Banjo Clark. He shares a few words of wisdom. It's only a minute long, and I thought you'd appreciate this.
Some of the most generous people I know have no money. And that's how it should be. When we have no money, it's a different lifestyle. When you see the old people, there was no, in our language, we have no such word as please or thank you, because it is what is expected of us.
Had a little technical glitch there, sorry. That's what happens when the audio clicks.
Some of the most generous people I know have no money. And that's how it should be. When we have no money, it's a different lifestyle. When you see the old people, there was no, in our language, we have no such word as please or thank you, because it is what is expected of us is that we share and we give what we have. Today, we have to say please, we have to say thank you, we have to beg for things. In the old days, it was just a giving thing that we would share things. That was a part of who we are. And not only for Aboriginal people, I expect people all around the world would do the same things before money. But nowadays, it's mine. There are words like mine. We don't share our things anymore. And it's become, it kills us as human beings, as a society, of as a race. When I say race, I'm talking about the human race. But we deny other people shelter. We deny other people food. We deny other people their survival purely because of money.
Something worth thinking about. I always appreciate when elders, especially elders who have lived without money, live without public recognition, and yet are still living long and healthy and happy lives because they focused upon the essential meaning of their life. Now I'd like for you to listen to a clip about what nuclear war would look like, according to an expert, Bill Perry. Bill Perry, you remember, is the former Secretary of Defense.
Bill Perry has spent most of his life watching the world prepare for nuclear war, and he thinks we aren't nearly as scared as we should be.
I think the professionals in the field have a pretty good understanding of the impact of the use of nuclear weapons. But the general public certainly does not, and many of our leaders do not.
Perry's 89 years old. He lectures at Stanford, launched an online seminar last year, and travels the world 2 or 3 months a year to talk about how close we've come to catastrophe and how close we still are. He often talks about his nightmare scenario, where a small amount of enriched uranium ends up in the hands of a terrorist group.
If they had maybe 40 kilograms, they could make an improvised nuclear bomb.
But what would be the consequences?
The consequences of a 15-kiloton bomb would be Hiroshima. And besides the 80,000, 100,000 casualties, the social, the political, and the economic consequences are just really hard to believe.
How realistic is this, though? Isn't this just some sci-fi fantasy fear?
I think of all of the nuclear catastrophes that could happen, this is the most probable. I think I would say it's probably an even chance this will happen sometime in the next 10 years.
An even chance?
Even chance. Sometime in the next 10 years.
You may desperately want to dismiss Perry as an alarmist, but he's a renowned expert, often called upon by world leaders. I met him in Mexico City, where he was attending the celebration of a 50-year-old nuclear ban treaty and running a closed-door planning meeting for top nuclear proliferation experts from around the world, known as the Group of Eminent Persons. They made us turn off the camera. The truth is, the chance of a nuclear war is not what it once was. In the late 80s, there were 70,000 nukes around the world. Today, there are only about 15,000. But Perry's not comforted by better odds.
We have the possibility of a regional nuclear war between Pakistan and India, for example. Even if they use only half of their nuclear arsenal, those bombs would put enough smoke in the air and enough dust in the air that would go up and settle in the stratosphere, then distribute itself around the planet, would block the rays of the sun for years to come. There could be millions of people die from that alone.
That's a horrific vision. Does it keep you up at night?
The one that really keeps me up at night is the one which is not as probable, and that is that somehow Russia and the United States blunder into a nuclear war. an all-out general nuclear war between the United States and Russia would mean no less than the end of civilization. That's not being dramatic, that's not being hyperbolic, that's just what would happen.
Today, Russia and the U.S. have 90% of the world's remaining nukes, many of them old and prone to error and false alarm. And they're in the hands of leaders who Perry sees as having cavalier attitudes about their potential.
Are there things you see with President Trump that concern you?
Yes. I think, unlike President Obama, he doesn't have a clear understanding of what the nuclear issues are and what the nuclear dangers are. Secondly, I think he's demonstrated an impulsive temperament. The first of them is solvable. We can learn more if he cares to do it. The temperament issue, I'm afraid, is just there.
And that's why, at the age of almost 90, you're here in Mexico City and not on a golf course.
Exactly.
Wise information. We should have a national grassroots effort to denuclearize our government, the Pentagon. This president has turned over to the pro-nuclear, pro-preemptive first strike groups of admirals, generals, and the neocons. And that does not bode well for nuclear-free war. And finally today, let's hear something about a radical form of religion that is responsible for the vast majority of Islamic, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda killings and philosophy, and to distinguish it separate from the vast majority of people believing in Islam, so they're not united and therefore causing unnecessary prejudice and bias against those who are believing in Islam in a peaceful in a loving way. Here's that lesson.
Peace be upon you. This is how Muslims greet each other around the world. The ideal society almost all Muslims strive for is, as the Quran puts it, Dar as Salam, literally the house of peace. According to Islam, we are working toward a time of security, abundance, peace, brotherhood, and well-being across all of humanity. Muslims believe that Jesus is the Messiah and that together with his return, all of humanity from all religions will be saved from chaos, war, conflicts, racial and ethnic hostility and cruelty. So, if that is the beliefs of 99% of the 1.6 billion Muslims across the globe, how can the members of groups like ISIS claim to be speaking for the Muslim world? Because they get their beliefs from Wahhabism. What is Wahhabism? It's an ultra-conservative, ultra-orthodox, socio-political, religious movement founded in the 18th century by a student named Mohammed ibn Abdul Wahhab, based on the teachings of Ibn Taymiyyah, a man who's called a fanatic by some, whose teachings were rejected by many religious leaders and teachers of the time. Wahhab, who studied Ibn Taymiyyah's teachings, believed that Islamic practices and the religion itself needed to be purified, that those not practicing those versions of Islam set out by Ibn Taymiyyah's teachings should be killed. In order to spread his views, Mohammed ibn Abdul Wahhab needed political backing. In 1746, he found that alliance with Mohammed ibn Saud. Through this alliance and with weapons from the British, they were able to create the first Saudi government, which eventually grew into the powerhouse that is now modern-day Saudi Arabia. So how exactly does Wahhabism differ from other forms of Islam? Well, it rejects and prohibits things like honoring individual personality, birthdays of oneself or the birthdays of those honored religious figures. Honoring of a person's death is looked down upon. They're rejecting visiting graves, building shrines that are either whether they're Islamic, Jewish, or Christian. They reject visiting holy places and any analyzation or rational interpretation of the Quran, a key part of Islam. They believe that anyone who does not follow their distinct, extreme brand of Islam is not worthy of Islam. That their belongings, their land, and their very lives are to be conquered and stolen. which is why simply calling groups like ISIS Islamic extremists is not only unfair, but incorrect. They do not get their beliefs from the teachings of Islam any more than Warren Jeffs and his fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who believe in polygamy and forced child brides, get theirs from the Mormon Church. According to the head of the World Islamic League in London, Syed Mohammed Mousawi, said this, "In fact, Wahhabism is the origin, is the mother of all of these terrorist groups." Much like those who follow a strict literal interpretation of the Bible, Wahhabism ignores the intellectual. It ignores the individual, which are the root of these violent extremists, not Islam. Wahhabism, in the hands of groups like ISIS, works on the very idea that conflating the two religions and destroying any other form of Islam in the world, along with all other religions, is fair. They believe it is their duty. And they are using the extremist, violent, and quite un-Islamic religion of Wahhabism to justify it. And with centuries-old roots in Saudi Arabia, it financially behooves ISIS to follow Wahhabism and its teachings of pure, material domination.
Okay. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen today. And tomorrow, we're honoring Earth Day by having on a woman who is the world's greatest authority on trees and the sacredness of trees, the health benefits of trees, and why we should plant more of them. So we're going to be honoring Earth Day tomorrow with our own special guest. You won't want to miss it, the whole hour.
As long as you live, someone who loves you tender like I do, you'll never find, no matter where you search, someone who cares about you. Take the end of all time, someone to understand you like I do. You'll never find the rhythm, the rhyme, all the magic we shared, just us two. Someone who needs you like I do. You'll never see.